I'm Stephen Petro. The Civilist is on the lookout for sponsorships. Just think, listeners could be hearing your message right now. If that appeals to you, let's talk. For now, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and share it with your friends. Okay, here's the show. Welcome to the Civilist podcast from WUNC and PRI, a no-judgment zone to talk about today's toughest political and personal issues. I'm Stephen Petro. On this episode, to tweet or not to tweet a cancer diagnosis.
I'm not even sure what I said next, but I think it was something like, cancer, fine, early, they think, more surgery, soon.
Just what are the rules about illness and privacy in the digital age? And my guests argue, nicely, how much gay PDA is appropriate at a conservative wedding, while a listener frets about whether to invite her nasty sister-in-law for a visit.
Honestly, I don't care to ever see her again, but I do care about my brother-in-law and my husband and would like to help them rekindle their relationship.
And I will tell you who gets the middle armrest on an airplane. That's all coming up right here on the Civilist Podcast. Now it's time for my take on how to disclose a serious illness in the digital age. To tweet or not to tweet? That's a question millions of us will face this year after being diagnosed with cancer or heart disease or Parkinson's. In other words, we'll find ourselves deciding how and when to tell others of a new diagnosis. In today's world, there really aren't any norms about privacy or disclosure when it comes to illness. People are kind of making it up along the way. Take blogger Margaret Detweiler. She's 50, married, and she's the editor of Tonight.com. After learning she had ovarian cancer, Margaret did what more and more people are doing. She began writing about it online. Here's an excerpt she read to us from the blog.
Suddenly, I felt a hand plop over my shoulder. It was my neighbor. I hadn't noticed that she'd been standing right next to me. She was clearly loaded. "Hey," she said wide-eyed. "Wow." I didn't know if she was saying wow because she'd heard what I just said or she was plastered. So I asked, "Did you hear what I just said?" "What? That I have cancer?" "What? I have cancer." She looked at me like I was crazy and just said, "Wow."
Before the internet, people with serious diseases usually kept quiet. I got my own cancer diagnosis back in the 1980s, but I sure wasn't going to talk to just anybody about it. Call it my zone of privacy. I never wanted to share the intimacies of that chapter of my life, and certainly not my appearance. Once chemo had given me the haircut of a lifetime, I refused to be photographed. With this mindset, I was shocked 10 years ago when a good friend of mine, Natalia Kraft, was diagnosed with breast cancer. Within days, she had created one of the first cancer blogs. Funny and chilling to the bone, she titled it The Boob Blog. Over time, Natalia posted hundreds of photos of herself, pre-surgery, post-surgery, having lost all of her strawberry blonde tresses. And she wrote with a brutal honesty about everything. Collapsing veins, violent fits of vomiting. And then one day came this sentence. "There are now tumors in my brain. Oh my." With the internet and social media, the world as I knew it was changing. And with it, our notions of privacy. In 2015, Lisa Bonchick Adams, a mother of three, was diagnosed with breast cancer and began tweeting daily to her 15,000 followers. Because she was so public, people criticized her and begged her not to turn her private suffering into a public circus. Should there be boundaries in this kind of experience? One critic asked caustically in print. This echoed novelist Joyce Carol Oates, who wrote in 1971, "Disease is private." Well, not so much anymore, and I think that's a very good thing. Here is Margaret Detweiler again.
I wanted to eat a quiet meal and not have to deal with explaining anything, or so I thought. We shuttled to a back table, but of course, Tommy was unavoidable. So when he went in with a swing for a handshake, I returned it. "How have you been? Where have you been?" he asked, while pulling me in awkwardly for a kiss on the cheek. I got a good whiff of whiskey, beer, and mops. "I've been sick. I'm recovering." "Oh, I had no idea. You're better, though." "Actually," I paused for a minute. I hadn't told most of my closest friends and family about my 2 days ago diagnosis. Do I tell random bartender? What the hell? "No," I replied. Oh, I just kissed you, he laughed, grabbing both of my hands. I'm not even sure what I said next, but I think it was something like, cancer, fine, early, they think, more surgery, soon.
Witnessing Margit and Natalia's journeys completely changed my perspective on privacy and disclosure. I've seen the outpouring of support from friends and colleagues in posts and tweets. Can I take you to the doctor? How about if I make dinner for you tonight? You're not hungry? Fine, I'll come read to you. The online community, often disparaged as virtual, is actually the real thing, a community. The other day, I checked in on Margit's Facebook page after a recent update. Here's what two friends of hers had to say.
You are incredible. Thank you for your bold, brave, and beautiful shares.
Glad to hear you are enjoying the small good moments and hoping you are suffering the worst moments only briefly. XO.
I asked Margit this week what it had meant for her to be so public. What had she learned?
The support from friends and family and strangers really has been incredible. And it keeps me positive and reminded how connected I am to the world outside my little illness bubble.
Natalia Kraft shared a similar sentiment before her death in 2008. Her online support network materialized in very real ways to comfort her in her final days. So here's my thinking now. If there are any dilemmas about disclosure, they should be up to those like Margit and Natalia. They don't need any finger wagging from the sidelines. And now for new rules for better behavior. In this segment, my guests and I take questions about your social dilemmas, and we give you free advice. Back this week is Anne Strainchamps. She hosts To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio. That Peabody Award-winning show takes a closer look at culture, science, and what makes the world tick. Welcome back, Anne.
Hey, Stephen.
And Joshua Johnson is the creator of Truth Be Told out of KQED in San Francisco. That show examined human behavior, digging into how people can better handle racially charged situations. Hello, Joshua.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for both being brave enough to come back.
My pleasure.
Sure.
So I don't scare easily.
Good. So this time my icebreaker question is about what sticks in your craw? What's your pet peeve? And I'll start with my current pet peeve. I've been on a lot of these long security lines at the airport. And I'll see someone who suddenly goes to the front of the line and asks the person who is about to go through TSA if they can jump ahead of everyone else. That drives me crazy that they have not asked everyone else behind them as though it really belongs to that one person. And the excuse usually is, well, I'm late. Well, I'm sorry, I was late too, and I'm standing here online stewing. So that's my pet peeve. Joshua, what's yours?
My pet peeve are the people on Facebook who post links from fake news websites and get all in a lather over something that Sarah Palin never said. And I, as the journalist, default to going through link after link and doing the research and posting the proper information and saying, actually, link. And then they respond, well, it's the kind of thing she would have said. That makes me, as a journalist, it makes me want to just tear my hair out.
Oh my God, I have to confess, Joshua, that about a week ago, I reposted a link from abcnews.com.co, but I didn't see the .co, and it was a fake news story. And
I'm losing respect for you, Stephen.
I know. It was late. You know, I always say to people, do not post while drinking. So,
do not put, yes, no drinking and Facebooking. No,
exactly. So, Anne, pet peeve
Man,
of yours.
Man, you guys are so judgmental. You're scary. Stephen, I don't mind if people go ahead of me in line at the airport. That happened just the other week to
but
me.
But I'm late.
Like, sure,
I'm late. I'm
ahead.
Late, Anne. I don't want to miss my flight.
So well, she
okay.
is
I'm
late.
Keep
Let
an eye out
go.
For Anne at the airport, and okay. if I see Anne in line, I'm just going to skip.
Well, if she's late, listen. There's nothing wrong with being nice, you guys. I guess okay. I do live in the Midwest. maybe we're just nicer here, you know.
Maybe.
Okay, so my pet peeve actually is also about niceness. We get a lot of letters from listeners, and a lot of them are really great letters. And sometimes they have a legitimate gripe. There's something we got wrong. There's something we didn't do. And I always want to hear that stuff. Sometimes people write just to say something mean. You know, they just say like, "I hate the sound of your voice," or what. And I think, why would you bother to write to somebody you've never met just to tell them something mean. Like, the world is difficult enough. Don't add to the meanness.
I love your voice. Don't you love her voice, Joshua?
The lovely dulcet tones.
You can't ask that kind of question. He has to say yes.
Well, he wouldn't just say yes, but let's move on.
Oh, that's right. He's not nice.
No.
Well, there we go. Okay. We established that.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's hear a question from a listener who's been invited to a wedding.
Hi, my husband and I live in Baltimore, Maryland, and we are invited to his niece's wedding in rural Alabama. These are very conservative people. Normally at a wedding, I would feel free to show affection to my husband, hold his hand, kiss him, etc. But I don't want to offend anyone. On the other hand, I do want to act like I normally would, and I have to admit I don't mind making a political statement by being affectionate to my husband in Alabama. So, to what degree should I feel comfortable doing that, and also keep in mind what their values are? Thanks.
So this gay man is trying to decide how much PDA is okay at a conservative Alabama wedding. Joshua, you're a gay man living in progressive San Francisco, but you grew up in Florida. What do you think the caller should do or not do?
Well, it occurs to me that he said that he and his husband were invited to this wedding. And when I heard his story, I started replacing Alabama with Afghanistan. You know, some culture that I don't belong to, that I don't fully understand, but that I've been invited to enter. Do you know how much I would love to attend an Afghani wedding? I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be an opportunity to see people up close who never see me. It would be an opportunity for me to interface with people on a joyous, happy, celebratory occasion. And maybe I wouldn't hold my partner's hand while I was there, but that's okay. This opportunity for bridge building is rare. So for me, I would just not hold my partner's hand at that wedding. It's only a couple of hours. And if the family wants me there, if they want to affirm just my presence as part of the celebration, I can't say no to that.
So are you telling him to closet himself at this Alabama wedding?
I'm telling him to shift the focus from me to we. A wedding is about us. A wedding is about community. The fact that they invited him means that on some level, he is acknowledged as part of that community, of that family. No, it's not as deep as we would like. Yes, it is an acknowledgement. Baby steps.
Yeah, Stephen, I don't think it's about closeting himself. After all, they're going as a married couple. So, I mean, that's clearly out of the closet, I guess.
But nobody would know they're a married couple if they're not, you know, touching or, you know, holding
hands. Well, the whole
family
knows they've been invited. But they're standing around together. Well, if I'm sitting next to my husband, people know I'm married if I'm not touching him, right? That he's not just some strange guy.
Go on. Should the listener be worried about offending people?
I guess my thought was, it's his husband's family. So what does his husband want? And he's going to be a partner and there to support his husband and his husband's family. So I would defer to whatever his husband is most comfortable with. And my only other thought was, I kind of sometimes think that manners are like clothing. You know, would you decide to go in jeans to the wedding because that's what you usually wear and you want to be comfortable? I mean, no, you'd go buy like the formal tux or the suit or the dress or whatever, even if it makes you uncomfortable, because that's what we do for other people. In other words, it's not about him. It's about his husband and his husband's family.
I think I'm going to disagree with both of you today, because I think that the PDA rules are the same whether you're a straight couple or a gay couple. And every wedding I go to, the couples, they're being affectionate, they're holding hands, sometimes they kiss each other. And I think that's right for this gay couple to do as well, if that's who they are. Otherwise, I think they become invisible. But there's not necessarily a right answer here, and I appreciate both of your points of view. So we're going to move on, and now we're going to hear from a listener who's trying to navigate some family drama.
My brother-in-law's second wife has driven a wedge into the family. She's behaved irrationally at several family events and caused estrangement between her husband and his parents and his siblings. She's also been particularly nasty to me. Despite all of this, I'm considering inviting them to my house when my mother-in-law and father-in-law will be visiting.
Honestly, I don't care to ever see her again, but I do care about my brother-in-law and my husband and would like to help them rekindle their relationship. My question is whether inviting them is a mistake. If I do, I am inviting drama and negativity into my home and potentially spoiling yet another family gathering. If I don't, I may be missing an opportunity to move past the ugliness and help my husband reconnect with his brother. Please help.
So, Anne, here I'm going to agree with your last piece of advice, which was about the husband, asking the husband what was right for his family. Here I think she should talk to her husband about how he would like to handle it. Do you agree with me, or do you have another suggestion?
Totally. Big warning red lights going flashing for me in this one. Like, what did she say? I want to help my husband rekindle his relationship with his... Like, why? Why is that her job?
Mm-hmm.
That's her husband's job. She's inserting herself and trying to manage her husband's relationship with his brother. I think she should back off, ask her husband what is the right thing to do. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's in terms of morality and what's right. But just at a practical level, every family does have difficult members. She's not responsible for her sister-in-law's behavior. If she wants to do the right thing and invite everybody in the family, then maybe invite everybody out to a meal in a restaurant, some public place. Her sister-in-law is maybe less likely to make a big scene in a public place. But I don't know. There are those warning bells for me that something doesn't quite add up. She seems a little passive-aggressive.
Yeah, and I would also say for myself, I would not want to invite more drama into my home. You know, when there's drama at a restaurant or I'm at a friend's house, I can always leave. I can't leave my own house. So, Joshua, is it a mistake to invite the brother-in-law and this horrible second wife?
For the reason that she stated, yeah, it's a big mistake, I think. I mean, look, it's like those rules from AA. You can't help someone who isn't ready to be helped. And if this woman has not reached rock bottom in her relationship with this family, inviting her and kind of nudging her to be like, you know, you really ought to be nicer to everybody around the table, that could make it worse. That could just make her feel like a cornered animal and her fight or flight instinct could kick in. Personally, if you bring drama into my house, I'm going to bring you out of my house. Like, you can't hang out in my house and bring drama under any circumstances. Life is too damn short. I don't need you to add to my trouble. But when you're ready to act like a human being, we're all grown-ups, then I'll let you in.
Thank you, Joshua. We need to move on. And for our last question, I think this is something we've all dealt with from time to time.
Hi, Stephen. I have a question about travel. Just how comfortable should people get on a plane? For instance, can I ask a person with smelly feet to put his shoes back on? If the guy sitting next to me is manspreading, or the person directly in front of me practically has her head in my lap because she's leaned so far into my space, how do I ask them to give me a bit more room without making things worse? Or do I just have to grin and bear it for 3,000 miles or 6 hours, whichever comes first? Signed, Frequently Frustrated Flyer.
How sad. So, as someone who does a lot of flying, I feel for her. Now let's go through her dilemmas one by one. Let's make it a lightning round. Number one, can I ask someone with smelly feet to put his shoes back on? Joshua.
Sure. There's a polite way to ask. Like, excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. Your feet, I can smell. I don't mean to be rude, but would you mind, please? I'd appreciate it. Yeah, I think there's a way to broach the subject politely.
Anne?
Absolutely not. It's a personal characteristic. The poor guy can't help it that his feet smell. You're just going to make him feel bad, so no.
I side with you, Joshua. Say it nicely, but get those socks and shoes back on. Number two.
There you go.
If the guy sitting next to me is manspreading or reclines the seat into my lap, what do I do without making things worse? Anne.
Okay, personally, I think there are certain things to be said about Midwestern nice, otherwise known as passive-aggressive. You bump the chair in front of you a whole lot, and then you tap the person on the shoulder and apologize and say, oh, I'm sorry, there's just so little room, I really don't think I can move without bumping you.
Joshua?
Well, I ain't from Minnesota. I'm from I'm from South Florida, and I'm more inclined to say, you know, to ask politely, excuse me, could I, you mind, I just have a little more room? And if that doesn't work, I'll just ask if they want to snuggle. They'll get the point.
Well, let me just jump in here because I have had my knees clobbered so many times in this situation. If you're the one in the seat, turn around and ask before you like yank it all the way back, or the very worst, just do it slowly. And as for who gets the middle armrest in between two people, the middle person gets both armrests. Each other person, if it's three people, already has their own armrest and they need compensation for being stuck in that middle. Well, that's all the time we have for this segment. Thank you so much, Joshua and Anne, for helping us out again this week.
My pleasure.
You are welcome, Stephen. Always a pleasure.
Joshua Johnson created Truth Be Told. He joined us from KQED in San Francisco. And Anne Strainchamps is the host of To the Best of Our Knowledge. She's at Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison. We'd love to hear your question about how to handle a social dilemma. Please send a voice memo with your message to thecivilistpodcast@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 919-263-0929. That's all for now. Please join us next time when I'll tell you how to craft the perfect apology. And best-selling author Andrew Solomon tells us how to be supportive when a friend comes out about their depression. The Civilist Podcast is a production of WUNC, PRI, and me. My producer is Rebecca Martinez. Mark Blasco wrote our theme song. Special thanks to Jess Clark. I'm Stephen Petro. Thank you for listening. Like what you've heard? Then please subscribe, share, and review The Civilist on iTunes. Your support really helps.